Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 12, Srimad Bhagavatam summarized, text 40 and 41. We chant text 40 responsively. I'll skip the word for word for now, since the Sanskrit and the word for word is pretty much the same. Actually, what we're chanting is the names of demons, so we'll all be purified by this chanting. Chai ja paundra kashavanam danta vakrasya durmate shambaro dvibhida pito mura pancha janadaya chai ja paundra kashavanam Danta vakrasya durmate Shambaro dvibhida pito Mura pancha janadaya Jai japandra kashavanam Danta vakrasya durmate Shambaro dvibhida pito Mura pancha janadaya
Chaitya pandra kashavanam Danta vakrasya durmate Dapito Mura pancha janadaya Chaitya pandra kashavanam Danta vakrasya durmate Shambaro dvibhidapito Mura pancha janadaya Chaitya pandra kashavanam Danta vakrasya durmate Shambaro dvibhidapito Mura pancha janadaya Chaitya pandra kashavanam
Danta vakrasya durmate
Shambaro dvibhida pito
Mura pancha janadaya
Chaitya pandra kashavanam
And we can chant 41 together. Mahatmyam cha vadaste sham varanasya sudharanam bharavataranam bhume nimitti kritya pangalam. Translation. There are in the Bhagavatam, there are descriptions of the powers and the deaths of the king of Chedi, Paundraka, Shalva, the foolish Dantavakra, Shambhara, Dvivida, Pita, Mura, Panchajana, and other demons, along with a description of how Varanasi was burned to the ground. The Bhagavatam also recounts how Lord Krishna relieved the earth's burden by engaging the Pandavas in the battle of Kurukshetra. And there's no purport. Madhyanati Mirandasya Dhyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Everyone in this list is probably familiar to you. I'll be speaking about them. Mostly we're going to be talking about the demons because Krishna's part in this story is often not very much. We hear about how wicked the demons are and all the bad things they do. Then at the end, Krishna kills them. That's his role in the story, often. So maybe there's one person in this list you didn't recognize, Pita. Pita was the commander-in-chief of, somebody's army. I wrote this down here. I'm going to do a lot of reading from my notes because I couldn't remember all this stuff. Anyway, we'll get to it. We'll see who he is. So the list starts with Shishupal. We all know how Krishna took care of him at the Rajasuya sacrifice. With some background, he comes up. These demons, they make appearances at different times in the Bhagavatam. And some of them are quite, they're very powerful. And there seems to be a gang of them. They're friends. They hang out together. And like Kamsa, he lists, these are my friends, and then he lists a bunch of demons. So Shishupal, we know Shishupal, he was supposed to get married to Rukmini, because Rukmini was his buddy, and he favored Shishupal, so he wanted his sister, Rukmini, to marry Shishupal. But of course, Rukmini wrote a letter to Krishna and said, "Come and get me." She said something in the letter about, I should be taken by this jackal or something like that. So you should come. And of course, she told him exactly how to do it, when he should come, what was the right time to do it. So Krishna, he went there, and he kidnapped Rukmini, just as she was returning from the Durga temple. And there had been many princes, or these kings, wicked kings, that come to support Shishupal, because they knew, the word travels around that maybe Krishna's going to show up and there's going to be some problems. So they all hated Krishna and they apparently liked Shishupal. They wanted to side with him. So there's a list of somebody. It says here, Shishupal's supporters: Shalva, Jarasandha, Dantavakra, and Vidurata. Those are included. And they're all part of what we're going to hear about today. And then it says, along with Pandraka and thousands of other kings. So this was a big, big affair. So many demons came to support Shishupal. And of course, Krishna took care of them very easily. So this, Krishna, of course, he routed them. He defeated them all. And they all left shamed. They tried to fight when Krishna took Rukmini, so then they tried to stop him from doing it. And he fought with them all and routed their armies. And they were humiliated. Of course, Rukmini especially, he was humiliated. He had some of his hair cut off, and then he went away for some time. And then other demons encouraged him, "Oh, it's all right, it's just a little setback here. You can get back at him eventually." But, of course, Shishupal, what happened at the Rajasuya sacrifice, that's where he met his end. There had to be someone elected to be the first person to receive worship at the Rajasuya sacrifice. This Rajasuya sacrifice, of course, it was a huge thing. King Yudhisthira was declaring that he was the emperor of the whole world. So, of course, there was some, before that, backstory where the Pandavas had to go out and conquer. They had this everyone had to express their submission to King Yudhishthira. So it was all settled, finally. King Yudhishthira was going to perform this big sacrifice. And Krishna was there, and everyone, kings and sages from all over the universe. It was a very big affair. So out of all these great personalities, one of them had to be worshipped first. And it was a great honor. It's like, this is the greatest person among all this assembly. This is the greatest person. So they asked for nominations, and Sahadev nominated Krishna, said so many wonderful things about him. And then it actually took place, that puja of the most honored guest. The guest of honor was Krishna. So after that, everybody was happy, except a few people, including Shishupal. So Shishupal started hurling his offenses at Krishna, one after the other. Somewhere it said that he had 100, right? Krishna was counting them. I'm not sure where this is stated, but I've heard this story. When he got to 100, then that was it. Because Krishna had to hold the others back. One thing Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that Krishna didn't want Shishupal to disrupt Maharaj Yudhishthira's sacrifice. These sacrifices, of course, it's a very sacred thing. So there can't be any blood spilled. That would ruin the whole thing. We'll hear later about Davida, how he passed stool and urine in the sacrificial arenas of the sages. So it has to be kept very pure. Even in ours, sometimes they rope off the sacrificial, the area where the yajna is to take place. So there has to be a certain ritual purity maintained. So Krishna wanted to make sure that there wasn't a violence there. So after Shishupal hurled all his insults, and Krishna said, okay, that's enough. He had to hold back Bhima and others so they wouldn't start a big fight. So it said that when Krishna killed Shishupal with his Sudarshan disc, he did it in such a way that not one drop of blood came down onto the earth to pollute the sacrificial ring. So just apparently his head just kind of slipped and came back right down, right down in place. Not one drop of blood fell on the sacrificial arena. So Krishna took care of him. Now Shishupal, he's always given, what happened of course was his soul, the jiva of Shishupal, who was Jai, so it merged into the body of Krishna. So this is an example. This is given, actually, I forget who's speaking. Is it Parikshit asking Shukadeva Goswami about why it seems that Krishna sides with the demons, with the devotees, excuse me. So at the beginning of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, that's described. And to give the answer to the question, why does it seem that Krishna is partial to the demigods? They said, well, actually, he shows mercy even to the demons. Said, just like Narada Muni, he himself witnessed this because he was present at the Rajasuya sacrifice. Of course, actually, Maharaj Yudhishthira, he asked Narada Muni about it. I forget what his question was. Basically, I think it was the same idea. So it was said there that you saw what happened to Shishupal. He was such a big demon, but he actually got liberation. It said that he got Sarupya Mukti. Of course, Sarupya Mukti means to have the same form as the Lord. But he already had the Sarupya because he's one of the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, and everyone in Vaikuntha has the same form as Krishna, unless they desire some other form in which to serve Krishna. So Shishupal is given as an example of Krishna's mercy. Because Krishna, even when he kills these demons, then he blesses them in some way. So actually, the way it looked at the sacrifice, it looked like Shishupal, or the soul, merged into the body of Krishna. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he actually was there beside Krishna, on the side of Krishna, is the way he expresses it. And he says that he stayed with Krishna for the rest of Krishna's leela. And then when at Prabhas Kshetra, when Krishna left, along with all the Yadus, then Jai also left with Krishna at that time, or Shishupal left with Krishna at that time. So he was present to witness Krishna's other pastimes for the rest of his leela. So the second person mentioned here is Paundraka. Now Paundraka, of course, he's famous for being a complete idiot, because he sent a message, he was so puffed up, he put on artificial, the symbols of Vishnu, and he challenged Krishna. He sent a messenger to Dwarka saying, you know, give up these false weapons, symbols that you're carrying. I'm actually the real Vasudeva, and I have the symbols to prove it, and you should come and take shelter of me, and so on. So the messenger was there in the assembly of the Yadus, and it says everybody there just broke up laughing. They just thought, this is so ridiculous. Who is this person? So Krishna was laughing along with them. But then Krishna said to the messenger, so he stopped laughing at one point, and he said, oh fool. So he said, send this message back to Pandraka, your master. Oh fool, I will force you to give up the so-called Sudarshan disc and the other divine symbols of mine you have dared to assume. When you lie down on the battlefield, you will become the shelter of dog. That's the way Krishna responded to him. So the messenger left, and Krishna decided, I'll go to Kashi. That's where Pandraka was, with his friend Kashiraj, another demon. Kashi or Banaras or Varanasi, they're all the same. Banaras is actually the modern pronunciation of Varanasi. You can hear how they sound almost the same. Varanasi, Banaras. So it's also called Kashi. So that's where Pandraka was. So when he saw that Krishna had arrived, then he went out to challenge him. Backed up in the rear guard was Kashiraj, and he had three Akshrohinis with him to challenge Krishna. So it said first Krishna took care of Kashiraj's Akshrohinis. He decimated them, just like Rudra at the time of annihilation. So it was a real massacre of these three Akshrohinis. Then it says, Krishna addressed Pandraka. My dear Pandraka, the very weapons you spoke of through your messenger, I now release unto you. Okay, I'm going to give you my weapons. Here's my Sudarshan. Oh fool, now I shall make you renounce my name, which you have falsely assumed. Having thus derided Pandraka, the Lord destroyed his chariot with his sharp arrows. The Lord then cut off his head with the Sudarshan disc, just as Lord Indra lops off a mountain peak with his thunderbolt weapons. With his arrows, Lord Krishna similarly severed Kashiraj's head from his body, sending it flying into Kashi city like a lotus flower thrown by the wind. So Kashiraj or Pandraka, one of them had boasted that they were going to send Krishna's, they were going to go out and defeat Krishna and send his head back. So this head came flying into the city, and people were looking at it. They weren't sure what it was, but then they realized, oh, that's not Krishna. That's our master, Kashiraj. And then it says, Pandraka also got Sarupya Mukti. So Pandraka had a son named Sudakshina, and Sudakshina, he wanted to avenge his father's death. He was so angry, he said, I'm going to kill all the Yadus. Krishna has killed my father. I'm going to kill the whole Yadu dynasty. So he prayed to Lord Krishna for a benediction. And Lord Shiva, he prayed to Lord Shiva for a benediction. And Lord Shiva empowered him or created him, allowed him to create this fiery demon. And Sudakshina sent this fiery demon to destroy Dwarka. And he arrived at Dwarka, the outskirts of Dwarka, challenging the city. Of course, everyone was terrified, this big demon. Somebody went to Krishna and told him what was going on. And at this time, Krishna, he didn't want to deal with it, because he was playing some game, gambling in chess or something. And he said, don't disturb me, I just want to continue finishing my game. Somebody else can take. So he sent Sudarshan. Said, Sudarshan, you go take care of this demon. So Sudarshan went out and challenged him and basically made him, this fiery demon, fear for his life. So he couldn't do anything to Dwarka. Sudarshan basically just chased him away. So this, we hear sometimes how these creatures or these demons that are created by some mantras, they have to kill somebody. They're called forth, invoked in order to create havoc or actually kill somebody, create destruction. So because he couldn't do it in Dwarka, he turned around and went the other way, and he went back to Varanasi, and he burned Varanasi to the ground. One of the things that was mentioned in this verse today was that we heard that the Bhagavatam also mentions how Varanasi was burned to the ground. So that's the context of that. This fiery demon created by Sudakshina went back to Kashi, and instead of destroying Dwarka, destroyed Kashi or Varanasi. So the next demon here, as we go through this litany of demons, is Shalva. He's first mentioned when Jarasandha, you know, in Mathura, Krishna was constantly being attacked, which is why he built Dwarka. So one of the times when Jarasandha came, what is it, 17 times, I think it was in the 18th time with Kali Yavana. So that last time, when he came with Kali Yavana, then Shalva was also there during that. He also sided with Jarasandha during that battle. Of course, there wasn't any battle because that was the one when Krishna left, became Ranchor, and he left the battlefield. And he was also one of them who sided with Rukmini. So he was also Rukmini at Rukmini's supposed marriage to Shishupal. He also sided with Shishupal then. So let me just read this. It's hard to remember all these points. So this is from the chapter summary. Shalva was one of the kings who had been defeated at the time of Rukmini Devi's marriage. Having vowed then that he would rid the earth of all the Yadavas, he began worshipping Lord Shiva each day by eating only a palmful of dust. Sometimes you hear people eating ashes. Like, boy, that's a delicacy compared to dust. I mean. Palmful of dust. He did it for a year. After a year had passed, Shiva appeared before him and asked him to choose a benediction. I always find this interesting. These demons, they do some crazy thing to please Lord Shiva or somebody, and Lord Shiva actually responds. Said, all right, you're crazy enough to do this to please me. All right, what do you want? So that's what he shows up and says, okay, I'll give you something. You're so stubborn and crazy. And, all right, you tried so hard. All right. So he asked for a benediction. And Shalva begged for a flying machine that could go anywhere and that would strike terror into the hearts of demigods, demons, and humans alike. Lord Shiva granted this request and had Mayadhanava construct for Shalva a flying iron city named Saubha. Shalva took this vehicle to Dwarka, where he and his huge army laid siege to the city. Now at this point, Krishna's not there. He's out of town for some reason. From his airplane, Shalva bombarded Dwarka with tree trunks, boulders, and other missiles. And he produced a mighty whirlwind that obscured everything with dust. When Pradyumna, Satyaki, and the other Yadu heroes saw the plight of Dwarka and her residents, they went out to do battle with Shalva's forces. So Shalva fought for some time with Pradyumna. Now Shalva, he was friends with Mayadhanava, so Maya means trickery. So he knew different kinds of magic spells that could create illusions. So he was fighting with Pradyumna, and at one point, Pradyumna was actually getting the upper hand, and it says that Pradyumna would cause the Saubha airplane to kind of lose navigation control or something. It just started going all over the place. They couldn't control it. But also Shalva was in it as it was doing this. But one of Shalva's followers, Juman, he struck Pradyumna in the chest. And it was such a heavy blow that it made him unconscious. And his charioteer, Pradyumna's charioteer, took him off the battlefield. You probably remember this. He took him off the battlefield. And when Pradyumna woke up, he said, what's going on? What am I doing here? Oh, this is a great disgrace. And he chastised him. The Kshatriya should never leave the battlefield. So anyway, he got back on the chariot and went back to work. It says he ordered his driver once again into the presence of Juman. As Prajumna fought with Juman, other Yadu heroes like Gada, Satyaki, and Samba began to create havoc among Shalva's army. The battle continued in this way for 27 days and nights. When Lord Krishna returned to Dwarka, he found it under siege. So it went on for all this time, and Krishna didn't know about it. He's arriving home, and this is what he's finding. At once, he ordered Daruka to drive his chariot onto the battlefield. Suddenly, Shalva noticed the Lord and threw his spear at Krishna's charioteer. But the Lord shattered the weapon into hundreds of pieces and pierced Shalva and his Saubha vehicle with numerous arrows. Shalva responded by shooting an arrow that struck Krishna's left arm. So we hear actually in these battles that sometimes Krishna gets injured, apparently injured. So here he got struck in the left arm by an arrow shot by Shalva. Amazingly, the Lord dropped the Sharanga bow he was holding in his left hand, because he's right-handed, so he holds the bow in his left hand, shoots with his right hand. The demigods watching the battle cried out in alarm upon seeing the bow fall, while Shalva took the opportunity to insult Krishna. Lord Krishna then struck Shalva with his club, but the demon, vomiting blood, disappeared. A moment later, a man came before Lord Krishna, and after offering him obeisances, introduced himself as a messenger from Mother Devaki. The man informed the Lord that his father, Vasudeva, had been kidnapped by Shalva. Upon hearing this, Lord Krishna seemed to lament like an ordinary man. Now, we think of these things if we think of them in real life, because Krishna is really, playing the role and he's really into it. So these are horrible things. He's trying to fight this battle, then he hears that his father has been kidnapped. His mother has sent him this message. So Krishna says he's lamenting. Then it says, Shalva then led forward someone who looked just like Vasudeva, decapitated him, and took the head with him into his Sobha airship. Lord Krishna, however, could understand the magic tricks of Shalva. Thus he pierced Shalva with a shower of arrows and struck the Saubha vehicle with his club, demolishing it. Shalva descended from his airplane and rushed toward Lord Krishna to attack him. But the Lord took up his Sudarshan disc and severed Shalva's head from his body. With the killing of Shalva, the demigods in the sky played kettle drums in jubilation. The demon... Okay, now we move on. So that's the end of that story, basically. Then it says, the next person who appears in this list is Dantavakra. Then it says, then the demon Dantavakra took a vow to avenge his friend Shalva's death. So we kind of get the idea. It appears in the Bhagavatam that Dantavakra was right there, and he's going to attack Dwarka. But what we hear about in the 10th canto, especially in the commentary, and there's some quotes from the Padma Purana, that Dantavakra, on hearing of Shalva's death, he attacked Mathura, which is some ways away, because he was thinking, oh, maybe the Krishna will come there and I'll defeat him here. So he attacked Mathura. So Krishna left Dwarka. He had killed Shalva outside the gates of Dwarka, and instead of going right back into the city, triumphantly returning to the city, he went immediately to Dwarka to confront Dantavakra there. So that was a fairly short battle that took place there. It says, Dantavakra insulted Krishna with harsh words and struck him a terrific blow on the head. He actually hit Krishna on the head with a club. Without budging in the slightest, Lord Krishna bludgeoned Dantavakra's chest, shattering his heart. Dantavakra had a brother named, in other words, he killed him. Dantavakra had a brother named Vidurata, and he became distraught at Dantavakra's death. Taking up his sword, Vidurata confronted Sri Krishna, but the Lord cut off Vidurata's head with his Sudarshan disc. So Krishna has an array of weapons to use. Lord Krishna then visited Vrindavan for 2 months, and finally he returned to Dwarka. So this is when Krishna went back to Vrindavan. This is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it's mentioned, it's hinted at, actually, in different places in the Bhagavatam. The Acharyas point this out. One place it's hinted at is when Krishna returns to Dwarka after being in Hastinapur After the Battle of Kurukshetra, wonderful early chapters in the first canto, first Krishna leaves Hastinapur, and all the residents of Hastinapur offer beautiful prayers, especially the women of Hastinapur. Their prayers are quoted, very eloquent, philosophical prayers. So Krishna leaves. So there are these two chapters. Krishna leaves Hastinapur, and Krishna arrives in Dwarka. So there are prayers also when he arrives in Dwarka. So there, the Dwarkavasis, one of the things they say is that we're always missing you, you're always going here and there. And one of the places they mention is, I forget what word, it doesn't say Vrindavan specifically, but it means Vrindavan or Madhura Puri, something like that, which is greater Mathura, you can say. So it's hinted at there that Krishna sometimes goes to Vrindavan. And in the Padma Purana, it actually mentions specifically, in other places also, that Krishna returned. And it's described that he went to the Yamuna River, and when he crossed the Yamuna River, and he put on cowherd boy clothes, because he was dressed as a prince, he's not going to enter in Vrindavan like that. So he dressed himself first like a cowherd boy, and he went into Braja. And so there's some details to the story, which I don't remember, but it's described in different places. But in any case, Krishna stayed there. There's a long purport, and I think it's in the 78th chapter, the 10th canto, or 79th chapter. And it's described that, you know, Krishna spent 2 months there, and then when Krishna left, somehow Krishna arranged everything, so it was okay. Because the Brijbasis, in one sense, they're lamenting for Krishna, but they're also always seeing Krishna in a certain way. And in fact, it said their most intense darshan of Krishna is with his presence within their heart. So Krishna somehow, with his mystic power, he adjusted everything, so everything turned out okay. The Dwarkavasis were okay with his absence, and the Brijbasis, they went on things as they always did, and so on. So this happened after, because Dantavakra was the last, Vidurata actually, because he killed Vidurata. But these were the last two demons that Krishna killed. Let's see. Yeah, so then comes Shambhara. So Shambhara is mentioned in a few places. He was actually a real asura in the sense of how the devas and the asuras are fighting with each other. So this is on the, you know, celestial level. He's actually a person who fights on that level. He's mentioned in the battle with Vritrasura. So the devas and the asuras are fighting with each other. All the big names on both sides are mentioned in these battles. So Shambhara is mentioned in that context. He's the nephew of Hiranyakashipu. I'm not sure who his mother is. But, so of course, Hiranyakashipu, he has cosmic significance. He's directly born from one of the original Prajapatis of the universe, direct son of Diti. So this Shambhara, he's at that level, you can say, of a demon. And he's also mentioned as one of the chief aides of Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj is, of course, the grandson of Hiranyakashipu, right? Yes. So he's in that sampradaya of the asuras, this Shambhara. He's also listed in the battle that took place after the churning of the oat milk ocean, this Shambhara. Because there again, the demigods and the demons, they were churning, and then there was a big fight after. It took place on the shore of the ocean of milk. That's the battle where they rode on different kinds of carriers like rats and monkeys and lions and human beings and anything you can think of. So he was fighting in that battle. And when Kamsa lists his friends, he lists Jarasandha, Dravida, Narakasura, Banasura, and Shambhara is also included in that list. So this one too, well actually, the basic idea of this story is that Shambhara, actually the story, it related to the birth of Pradyumna, that's how he appears on the scene. How Pradyumna was the reincarnation or partial within Pradyumna, the son of Krishna and Rukmini, was Kamadev. Kamadev is his wife's name is Rati. So he was killed and he took birth, he entered into Pradyumna when Pradyumna was the son of Krishna. So right from the maternity ward, before the baby was 10 days old, he was stolen. So here's another great tragedy. So many tragedies in Krishna's life. Imagine poor Rukmini, her baby, 10 years old, is kidnapped. taken away. She doesn't know. Many years went by before she was able to see him. He was all grown up before he came home. So the story is that Shambhara demon kidnapped him and threw him into the ocean, and then a big fish ate him, and then the fish was caught in a net, so the baby's inside the belly of this fish, and it just so happened that this fish is brought to Shambhara, to his cook, to cook for Shambhara to eat. And it just so happens that Rati Devi is now a maid, a maidservant in Shambhara's household. When her husband was killed, she took service in Shambhara's household. Why that is just to make the story happen, it seems like. So, but then the eternal messenger appears on the scene, Narada Muni, and he explains to her, name is Mayavati, he explains to her what's going on here. So this child is actually your husband, Kamadev, and you're Rati, and you're going to be reunited again. So as he grows up, as Prajumna grows up, he's thinking of this Mayavati as like a mother figure. She's a maidservant in the house, an elder. So she starts, as we say, making Google eyes, or she says she moved her eyebrows in a flirtatious way. So he's thinking, whoa, what's going on here? What's my mother doing? And he said, he says to her, this is inappropriate. Why are you acting like this? So then she reveals everything to him. And she tells him, so this Shambhara, no, he killed you as Rati, so you should kill him. So then he does. I mean, it's described as short battle. He kills him. It says, Prajumna went to Shambhara, and after angering him with various insults, challenged him to fight, upon which Shambhara angrily took up his club and marched outside. The demon tried various magic spells against Prajumna. Oh, Mayavati, she said he'll try to use magic on you. So she taught him magic also, so that he would know how to counteract. But Prajumna fended off all of them, all his magic spells, with the Maha Maya mantras, and then beheaded Shambhara with his sword. At that moment, Rati Devi appeared in the sky and took Prajumna away to Dwarka. So then, of course, in the Bhagavatam, we have the scene where he appears in Dwarka and people aren't quite sure who he is, but he looks exactly like Krishna. So then it's all revealed. So then we have Duvida. Duvida is also, he was friends with all these other characters. And he was doing all kinds of things, churning up the ocean. He was very powerful, causing tidal waves. And then he went to Raivataka Mountain, which is, I think, outside Dwarka. I think it's on the seashore on the other side, where the Dyadus go there to have pastime. So Balarama was there, enjoying himself with ladies. And he was a little intoxicated from drinking Varuni. And Duvida showed up. And first of all, he just started doing vulgar things like showing his anus to the girls and so on. And then he was actually trying to take them away, actually trying to steal these ladies away from Balaram. And Balaram, at first, he just get a little angry. He just thought, this pesky person, let me just get rid of him. So he just threw a stone at him. But that wasn't enough. The Duvida just managed to dodge the stone. And then he actually started a fight. There was a big fight that went on. We hear how they denuded the forest because they used so many trees fighting with each other. Or Duvida did. He was uprooting one tree after another. Then it says, although he struck Baladev on the head with one tree after another, the Lord simply broke all the trees to pieces. Then the foolish apes started throwing a barrage of stones. Lord Baladev crushed them all to powder. Makes you think, like in baseball, they have the home run derby. So Baladev was hitting one home run after another with all these rocks that were being thrown at him, just busting them up. After which Duvida charged the Lord and hit him on the chest with his fists, infuriating him. Putting aside his club and plow weapons, Lord Balaram then struck Davida's throat, a martial arts move, and shoulder, at which point the ape vomited blood and fell down dead. So then, actually, I'm not going to be able to do all of this. Then in the list here that we went through today, this Pita was mentioned. I said you might not remember. So he was the head of Bhaumasura's army. So he's mentioned a little bit in the pastime of Krishna killing Bhaumasura. So Bhaumasura is also called Narakasura. He was the son of, what is her name? Prithivi? Or I think she has another name. Yeah, well, anyway, she's mentioned here as Prithivi, the earth goddess. So he had 1,000 arms, wasn't it him? 1,000 arms, Bhaumasura. And he also, in this list today, Mura was mentioned. So Mura was one of the guards. He was guarding, I think he was living in a moat, if I remember correctly. And he also, Krishna killed him first. And that's when we hear about this weapon that was like a fan with all these blades going around. Krishna destroyed that. And eventually he killed this Bhaumasura. He cut off his head. First he cut off right, he cut off all his arms except four. So he also got Sarupya Mukti. He got a four-armed form. And he cut off his head ultimately. And then the mother, Prithivi, she brought forward his son to Krishna, who was frightened. And Krishna said, it's okay. He appeased him. And then he went into the palace. He went into Dharakasura's palace. Krishna went in. And there happened to be 16,100 princesses in there. So this is how Krishna got his 16,100 wives. They all wanted Krishna. He expressed that desire. So what could Krishna do? He's a Kshatriya. He said, okay. So he married them all and brought them back to Dwarka in a grand possession. But before that, actually Krishna went to... This whole thing started because Narakasura had stolen the earrings of Aditi and some other things from the heavenly planets. So Indra actually came to Dwarka and he complained to Krishna, can you do something about this big demon? So the Krishna said, okay, I'll take care of him. So after Krishna took care of him, then he went to Indra's planet, went to see Indra and returned those things. And he, on the way out, Satyabhama was seeing these Parijata trees and said, I'd like to have one of those. So in response, Krishna took the Parijata tree for Satyabhama. Then we know what happened. Indra, who was at first was very grateful to Krishna for taking care of Bhaumasura and returning the thing, stolen paraphernalia. He challenged Krishna. He said, no, you can't take Parijata from the heavenly planets. It's not allowed. It can't leave here. So there was a fight with Indra and other devas. They fought with Krishna and Krishna defeated them. I don't know the details of the story exactly. But then Krishna took the Parijata tree with him. He got the right to take it and he planted it in one of the gardens next to Satyabhama's palace. So Panchajana is also mentioned. Panchajana was the demon who was inhabiting the conch Panchajanya. When Krishna went after his Gurukul he told his guru, what do you want for Dakshina? And Sandipani Muni said, well, I better get something special because Krishna's very special. Yes. So he said to Krishna and Balaram, please return see if you can bring my son back. He disappeared at Prabhas in the ocean. So Krishna and Balaram went there, and first they challenged the ocean, and the ocean said, well, I didn't take the ocean. It's this demon, Panchajana. He took your son. He took your spiritual master's son. So then Krishna he went and he killed the demon. He found out where he was. Krishna went after that, after killing the demon, he went to Yamaloka and retrieved the son. But when he killed, it says that he was inhabiting the body of the conch, this demon, Panchajana. So he killed Panchajana. But it said that Panchajana was actually like Jayan Vijay. He was one of Krishna's associates in the spiritual world. So he was just returning to Vaikuntha. He was returning to Vaikuntha by being killed by Krishna. Because the conch shell, of course, is one of Krishna's eternal weapon, one of his eternal associates, actually. Actually, that conch shell gets so much mercy because it's always touched by the lips of Krishna. It says that when Krishna entered Dwarka and he blew the conch shell, it turned reddish, and reflecting his reddish bimba fruit colored lips. So this Panchajana was playing the role of a demon, but it was actually just for this pastime. And Krishna just was reunited, you might say, with his pastime, Panchajanya. So then the last thing that's mentioned here in this list is that it said here in the verse that Krishna, what does it say? It says this, their description, does it say descriptions? Yes, it says, the Bhagavatam also recounts how Lord Krishna relieved the earth's burden by engaging the Pandavas in the battle of Kurukshetra. So I'm thinking and thinking and thinking, where does it describe the battle of Kurukshetra in the Bhagavatam? It doesn't, actually. There are just some references to it in here and there in different places. I'll just read. Here's one. This is from the 9th chapter of the Bhagavatam. What is this? That means it's Bhishma Dev is speaking. In obedience to the command of his friend, Lord Krishna entered the arena of the battlefield of Kurukshetra between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana. And while there, he shortened the lifespans of the opposing party by his merciful glance. Euphemistic way of saying it. He shortened their lifespan. This was done simply by looking at his enemy. So that's how Krishna killed him at Kurukshetra. He actually killed him just by looking at them. Then Bhishma Dev says, let my mind be fixed upon that Krishna. And then this is Uddhava speaking to Vidura. Uddhava is recounting Krishna's pastimes. Certainly others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. And another one, this is also Uddhava. Oh no, this is Maitreya. Then, O Vidura, I think it's Maitreya. Oh, the Lord caused all the kings, both the enemies and those on the side of your fighting nephews, to be killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. All those kings were so great and strong that the earth seemed to shake as they traversed the war field. So we don't get a detailed description of the battle of Kurukshetra. You have to go to the Mahabharata for that. But there are references to it in different places in the Bhagavatam. So those were all the things that were mentioned today. Quick summary. Refresh our memory about some of these demons and Krishna's pastimes of killing them. Because, of course, he came to do that. It often appears, last time I gave class, it was about Krishna killing Agasura and Bakasura and Putana and so on. So it did, when that was just, most of these took place in his Kumara age, and he killed others in his Pauganda age. So now, later in his lifetime in Dwarka, he's still killing demons. So why so much killing? Because that's why he came. He was asked by Bhumi Devi to come and kill. And of course, for Krishna, again, it's just lila, it's just sport. And devotees relish, and even though devotees are soft-hearted and they don't like blood and guts and gore and all these things, still, because it's Krishna's pastime, then it's so wonderful. And we know that ultimately it's all good. Everything that Krishna does, of course, is good and beneficial to everyone concerned. So anything? Trivikram Prabhu?
So the question was asked that Dvavidya was a great devotee of Lord Rama.
Yeah.
How his fate became like this. And I think it stated that he had some kind of argument with Lachman or some disagreement with Lachman. And so I guess
that's how Dvavidya, he had served Lord Ram.
Right. Very nicely, you know.
But he was proud and he committed some offense. So he ended up fighting against Krishna, who is also Ram, of course, in this lila.
And another point, when Yudhishthira was asking Narad how Shishupal entered, merged into him, then Narad was explaining that the Lord is not, he does not see like us, good and bad, dualistic. That even in enmity, they're thinking about him.
Right.
And because of that, they're also purified. But don't be like Vena. Vena could not think good nor bad. He was like an atheist, you know. And so he was the only person that does not deserve the mercy of the Lord.
Hmm. Yeah, this. Who was the person you mentioned?
King Vena. Vena.
Vena?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he appears in a different context. But yes, they actually, Shishupala is also mentioned in that way because there are a couple of verses actually in the first chapter of the seventh canto that describe how you just get attached to Krishna, even if it's with enmity, if it's with love like the devotees have, or anger, different kinds of emotions you have, if they're directed toward Krishna, you still get the benefit because you're contacting Krishna because he's all good, you get a good result. So Shishupala is mentioned in that context. Of course, sometimes devotees are used as an example, even though we know, of course, he's an eternal servant, an eternal associate of Krishna. But he's used it as an example to show that. He was envious of Krishna, apparently. But still, because he was always thinking of Krishna, that Krishna is like the fire of Krishna burns up all these impurities, whatever the motive seems to be. Krishna overlooks that and he rewards the person with spiritual, gives them spiritual benefit. So Shishupala is mentioned in that context. Prangavindapur?
That's in 7.1.32.
7.1.32.
Yeah. Kama, desha, bhayat, sneha, jata, bhakti, sharamana. Abesho is the key word. Abesho tu agam hitta bhavato gatim gata. Mm-hmm. Everybody got liberation, whoever had abesh. King Banner didn't have, but this demon, the list of demons they had.
Avesh means attachment, right?
Deep absorption. In
absorption,
Krishna.
Yeah.
Where does enemy come? Then Prabhupada quote that lot, the second verse.
Yeah.
The last line on this, Lord Krishna relieved the earth burden by engaging the Pandava in the battle of Kurukshetra. Mm. Why, I was thinking last many years back that why our focus on Bhagavatam more than Mahabharata and others. Because Hindus in general, almost all, most of the Hindus, they know Mahabharata. But the conclusion they can never come. Mm-hmm. When I read that sloka of Artha Vinirnaya, Brahma Sutranam Bharatasya Vinirnaya. In order to come to conclusion of Bharat or Mahabharata, they have to come to Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam, that 1.9.39, that Prabhupada put a one word and he actually magnified in the purport that all those soldiers, 640 million, they got liberation because of Krishna. And in one lecture Prabhupada even says, why would somebody would dress so beautifully to be in the battlefield? I mean, nobody goes battlefield to dress, to show up. But Krishna did. He exhibited so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And 3.6, I was just trying to link that, and Prabhupada says here, the Shishupal, they're so envious, they could not, they got liberation, but they could not glorify God. So three destinations in that purport. Those who, everybody got out of Maya, in one sense, but those who appreciated, they got Vaikuntha Mukti, glorified even higher destination. So it's very nice, the way Prabhupada put it.
Thank you. What about you, Prabhu?
One question is, you were mentioning one of the first demons, Pandaraka. So we remember that he threw extra arms. So
it seems like
that Lord Krishna Dwarka must have been going around with four arms. However, we do, in Rukmini, when she faints, Prabhupada describes that he manifested two extra arms. So maybe you can say something.
Yeah, that's the way it comes across, that Krishna generally in Dwarka has two arms, but at certain times, to facilitate the Leela, for whatever reason, then he sometimes shows four arms. And it's hard to understand the resonance of Dwarka sometimes. Just like I'm always amazed that pastime with in the cave. What was it when he went into the cave to fight with
Muchukunda?
Yeah. He was gone for so long, and after a while, the Dwarkavasi, they just left it. Thought, oh, Krishna must have died in there. Yeah, I was thinking it's so strange. Well, what about Balaram?
That's Jambavan.
Jambavan. Yeah. Jambavan. Yeah. So they left after some time. They thought, well, maybe Krishna's dead. But at the same time, they knew he was God. There are different things that show that they knew that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see this thing goes on in Krishna's Leela. Like whatever is necessary, whatever Krishna wants. Even it seems like there are many places. I remember one day in class, I had mentioned something about how the Brijbasis know that Krishna's God, and somebody was really, no, they don't. But there are many places where it really sounds like, and Krishna's telling them, essentially, he's telling them that he's God. Of course, he showed them Vaikuntha also, or the spirit, he told them Goloka Vrindavan. So they know and they don't know. That's what it, they know and they don't know. So it seems like in Dwarka, the same thing is going on. Krishna wants to, in Vrindavan, he wants to act like an ordinary cowherd boy. And in Dwarka, he wants to act like a prince. He's not acting like God, necessarily. But sometimes he does. So sometimes, as the need arises for his Leela, then he shows four arms. And if the devotees, they're all devotees in Vrindavan, are demigods, they know he's Vasudev. They know that he has four arms, but they don't think about it. They see him as the role that he's playing. So that seems to be the explanation for it. There's a kind of yoga maya going on, obviously, in Krishna's pastime. This always has a play in it. Krishna makes devotees think in certain ways because it's all for their enjoyment, actually. Krishna, we say it's for Krishna's enjoyment, which it is, of course. He has the greatest, because he's the greatest, he has the greatest desire to enjoy. But he also has the greatest desire for his devotees to enjoy. So it's all enjoyment on all sides, and whatever and encourages that. And Krishna manifests in different ways.
Another thought, as far as the, you mentioned that about Battle of Kurukshetra. It's not really mentioned, but there's references. Mm-hmm. And then you see all throughout the Bhagavatam, there are different references. The stories are there, like Ramayana is there, but the whole Ramayana is not, you know. In other words, the Bhagavatam is full of names that are mentioned. And it seems like, although the Bhagavatam is the essence of all the scriptures and everything, but yet it seems like we have to have the knowledge of a whole, array of scriptures in order to actually be able to appreciate the Bhagavatam.
Yeah. Well, just like Prabhupada said, he said, I put so much effort in that first canto where there's a whole list of people who show up for Bhishma's passing away. And Prabhupada pointed out, there's biographies on all these different people in his purports. So that's one way we learn the background in so many things, is that Prabhupada explained things to us so we could understand what was going on. As you were talking, I was just thinking, actually, the narration of the Bhagavata, or the story of Krishna, where it begins, really, in the seventh chapter of the first canto, where does it begin? It begins right after the Battle of Kurukshetra, where Ashwatthama kills the sons of Draupadi's five sons. And then it goes on from there, the passing of Bhishma Dev, and Krishna returning to Hastinapur, as I was mentioning, returning to Dwarka, and so on. So the narration, then the Pandavas passing away. So all this, it's sort of like an epilogue to the Battle of Kurukshetra and everything that went on there. That's how the Bhagavatam carries on. And we know, of course, it carries on philosophically, too. So in that context, in that way, it's carrying on what was begun in the Bhagavad Gita. Raghavendra Prabhu?
Prabhu, did Pandraka manifest these extra arms like by some mystic power, or were they just like made of cardboard or something?
The picture I have in my mind is they just stuck some things on there somehow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was kind of ridiculous, which is, yeah. A lot of demons have a lot of powers. They, Balmasur had 1,000 arms, and so did Kartavirya Arjuna. But he only had 2, and he stuck on 2 more. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah.